This is a production of Cornell University.
It's a beautiful day. I'm calling them in order. So welcome to the last UPSA meeting of this year. We'll start with roll call for the members of our humanities, Kristen, Jesse.
Here.
Becca.
Here.
Life Sciences, Tyler.
Here.
Helena.
Here.
Cassandra.
Here.
Physical Sciences Engineering, Ariana.
Here.
Sarah.
Here.
Alex.
Here.
Zenda.
Absent.
Professional Schools, Alexei. Gabrielle.
Not here.
Cheyenne.
Here.
Social Sciences, Margaret.
Here.
Tara Rose.
Here.
Wendy. Mo.
Here.
Master Samir.
Here.
Next, we have approval of the minutes from the April 23rd meeting.
I have never been able to do this.
Okay, what are they?
6 new business, 4 I was going to ask any answers that is recorded as their standards are lower, it should be our standards when you vote.
I second that amendment for motion.
Actually, the opposite question.
Okay, any dissent to amending that? Jesse, can you say it one more time?
So, Roman numeral 6, A, 6, 1. It says their standards are lower, should be our standards would be lower.
6A, 4, 1.
You say 4, 1, thank you.
6A, 4, 1. Okay. Any dissent to making that amendment? Seeing none, the amendment passes. Anything else on the minutes? Motion to call the question?
Right.
Is there any dissent discussing the minutes as it stands now? Seeing none, the minutes are passed. Next, we have presentation. And first, we have Heather presenting on the CUE list.
Great. Hello, everyone. My name is Heather Fortenberry. I am the Career Exploration Advisor working with Cornell Central Career Services in 103 Barnes. So for those of you who have never been in the building next to the campus store and across from Willard Street, we'd love to see you there. So I'm really excited to be here. I know the weather's beautiful and you're probably all like have this lovely meal, so enjoy. Feel free to ask questions as I'm presenting. This is our new networking platform that students and honestly alumni have been asking for many, many years, and we're lucky to have this now as part of one of the many resources that Cornell University offers for our students. And so I'll get started. I have a very quick little PowerPoint presentation just to give you an overview of the system, but mostly I'm going to walk you through the platform and invite you to join if you'd like. So, CUE links. We all know that Cornell loves acronyms, so we'll kind of get right into it. Basically, this system is about learning and informing, networking, and really knowledge sharing. We wanted to stay away from the word mentor as much as possible, mostly because students are going to use this system in a lot of different ways. It could be to establish a mentor down the road, but we feel that relationship is an organic relationship, less about us kind of matching you to somebody that we feel is a best fit. So we really wanted to develop a system that allows students not only to find resources to us to meet their professional career goals, but also their academic goals, their personal goals, and so we feel that this system is a good work in progress, I will say. Basically, when you come in as a student, you develop or you have kind of an established network here at Cornell, and so these people kind of represent those connections, those networking possibilities. Maybe it's a research colleague, maybe maybe you have a roommate, and so it's a family member, your professors, your faculty advisors, etc. now, and career advisor, of course. Now, what the system does is it really expands that network. So one of the really exciting aspects of this tool is that, you know, we have Cornell loves the silos. Like, okay, you know, we're going to put the students from the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences here, and they could potentially network with their alumni. What the system does is it really takes away those silos and allows any student, regardless of degree, regardless of field, major, undergrad, grad, PhD, et cetera, to be able to connect with Cornell University alumni across the board, really based on your interest. So let me show you. I'll just jump right in and show you the system. Eventually. Okay, so this is the landing page. So when you type in, and all of you are welcome again to join cuelink.cornell.edu, you'll come to this page. One thing that I'll point out is that if you join the community, there are four different ways to join or to create a profile. You can decide what you want to do. Currently, students are imported into the system. This does not mean that you automatically have a profile, but it does mean that if you use your Cornell Net ID, you are automatically approved. So you do have to go through the SSO approval process, type in your Net ID and your password, and the system will automatically approve you to create a profile. If you decide to use a different email address, you'll come into my approval queue, and I'll say, like, oh, look, there's a graduate student, let me approve them. But it's just a little extra step. So you decide what you want to do, if there's a Gmail or some other email account you would like to use. If you'd like to use LinkedIn, it's going to pull from whatever email you use to create LinkedIn. So I say that because you'll get notifications to that email. So just keep that in mind. But it will pull in your profile picture and your most recent work history and academic history. But we all know LinkedIn is very, very top. So that's pretty much it. Facebook, if you have a professional Facebook account, feel free to use it. Otherwise, I would recommend that you not use Facebook to create a profile. That is up to you. So once you create a profile, this is the dashboard. I'm going to show you two really quick things, maybe three really quick things that are very exciting. So there are a couple different ways to navigate this page. And again, you're looking for questions. You know, you're looking for those opportunities to have your questions answered, whether that's, I'm a PhD candidate, I'm thinking about academia versus industry, who can help me with some of these answers? Or, oh, I'm thinking about, you know, going into this field or navigating for now. Great, there's lots of people, lots of alums that are excited to answer those questions and provide some resources. You can see at the top of the page, you have a navigation. You can click onto Cornell Network. It's very exciting. We have actually more than that in the system of alums, so 1,200 that are active and ready to connect. We have piloted this platform, so there are more alumni who potentially have already connected with some individuals. Alums and students can both go in and set preferences. So I would like to meet with or connect with 5 students a month, for example. If I have 5 connections, I'm not going to be available in the search until next month. So you, as students, can also decide if you want to be part of the peer network to help any of your classmates, your fellow grad students, PhD students, and also undergrads, as they have questions. And there will be questions, so you can certainly click on that as well. Programs, we are slowly building, but there's nothing really available quite yet. But this is a kind of a more structured, allowing individuals to meet certain goals, for example. Additional registration questions might be part of a program, but that's all you really need to know. Information will be marketed to you as we build that out a little bit more. There are discussion questions. So you can ask questions if you'd like. You can respond to questions. You can follow or unfollow. So if you're like, wow, this is a really interesting question, I too would like to know information about this, you could follow. And you'll get emails again to that email address. There are resources. So there's videos, there are documents. You can see that we have these separated by topic. So depending on what your question might be, you can use these resources as well. And we will continue to build on these resources. Just really, again, back to the home page, to the dashboard. As you're kind of walking through here, you can see that one of the aspects of the system is we do have an algorithm behind the scenes that based on how you answer the profile questions and your interests, it will kind of provide some recommendations for you. This is something that likely you're going to want to go into and update. Maybe you're thinking about doing some sort of a research project with a colleague in a different city or country. You could update that information. I would put New York because we know a lot of alums are in New York City. Makes it a little bit easier. So the first question is, what are some of those cities of interest? You can put in as many as you'd like. The industries are based on the Department of Labor, so they're very broad. You can be more specific in the next question, but for example, say you put consulting and entrepreneurship. Maybe you want research, which is another option. And then you could put in your dream company or a dream position. And again, maybe you're not really sure, but you have a general sense. I'm interested in research, or you have a very specific topic. And then, as you could save, and each time you log in, there'll be some recommendations for you. You can view a profile, you could star a profile and go back to them later. You can connect with an individual. So you could request a meeting or you could send a message. The message is very similar to an email. This is a teaching tool, so if you forget and you're just like, hey, you'll see a little message pop up that says, keep it professional, try to say hi or hello, is that okay? You could still send them if you wanted to, but you might get a message from the alum that says, I would recommend that you use hello or hi, a different type of greeting. You could also connect and request a meeting. You can see these are the how I can help. So alums are volunteering their time to be in the system. They want to connect with students. They are also indicating perhaps where the areas of expertise, the areas that they would like to talk to students as well. So you will see these little blue ribbons next to the topic if they're interested. You can also still click on anything. Maybe you're like, career industry trends, and maybe diversity at Cornell, and international careers. So this person has not indicated to those, but that's okay. Click on next. Again, the alums are choosing if they want to be available for a phone call or a video chat or an in-person meeting. Let's say you want to do a phone call. It prompts you to suggest some days and times. If the alum has taken the time to sync their calendar, you'll actually see those times and days that they are available. Makes it a little bit easier, but it's still nice and easy. Click on next. And then a template will pop up, and you can see that not only does it indicate my title, so I'm a graduate student focusing on research in the field, but it also indicates those areas of interest that I would like to chat with the alum about. Click on next, and that alum is going to get that message. And then you can connect with them, whatever is easier for you. I've seen kind of behind the scenes that some alums are just like, yes, here's my Skype ID, or it's easier if you just send me an email with your question. So you can kind of go back and forth, and based on your availability and the alum's availability, you'll find those times that work best for you. One last thing that I'll show, and then I'll open up for questions. That when you go to the Cornell network, there are filter options. So you could filter by degree if you'd like, or filter by interest, or you could just use a search bar, which probably most people are going to use. That's what I usually use, to be honest. and just type in whatever you want to. But the profile questions are pretty basic, and you can see based on those filters, those are kind of some of the topics that we're asking you to complete to create a profile. But also you have this fun little map view, which just keeps on changing and growing as we add more and more alumni to our system. Becoming more international as we invite our international alumni. So that's kind of exciting as well. And the last very quick thing that I'll just mention is because we are inviting, we are slowly rolling this out, and we are inviting more and more alumni, I would recommend that you create a search alert, which is at the very top of the page. It might be a little bit hard to see for those of you who are in the back. But creating the search alert will notify you as new alums come into the system that kind of match your interests. So we're really excited about this. I do have just some little note cards available with the link and some basic information. I also left my business card, so if you have any questions or would like kind of a walkthrough in person, feel free to reach out to me. I will also mention that this system is building, so we've had some great conversations, and we're adding some information. We are, making changes as students and alums come to us with some suggestions, so know that that's an opportunity for you as well, and we will do our best to accommodate anything that comes our way. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Is that okay? I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
What's the best way to contact you?
So my business card is right up here. You can call me or email me, whatever is easier for you.
So first off, thank you very much for the presentation. I'm curious, though, in terms of how is this going to be advertised to alums? So
yeah.
I'm not going to grab a lot in terms of this. Can you send out the alumni newsletter, or how are we going to? And Cornell has, I think, about a quarter billion living alumni. So
yeah.
If you want to get as many as you can out of this, who do you want to work?
We do, and so great question. So for those of you who maybe didn't hear, how are we advertising to alums? Also to our students, right? So we have our alumni affairs and development colleagues who are working closely with alumni. We started, honestly, inviting those alums who are very involved, trustee council, CU volunteer, et cetera. We want to reach out to the people who've already kind of expressed an interest, mentoring committees, et cetera. So there are a lot of graduate alumni that are in the system already, which is exciting. But yes, we're going to be posting it in Alumni Magazine. We have social media, so people are posting on their LinkedIn pages through the various Cornell clubs across the world. So again, rolling out, like, our Cornell Club colleagues have not yet necessarily been giving the specific topics, but some of them have already taken that initiative. Great question. Yes.
Hi.
Is
sorry. Do the profiles between alumni and students differ? And if so, how do you make that transition from a student to alumni?
Yeah. So the profiles themselves doesn't really there's not too much of a difference aside from some of the how I can help questions. But yes, we will have a process in place. We are hoping to postpone that rollover from student to alumni. For those of you who are leaving Cornell this May, we're hoping to postpone that for actually a full year so that you as a student can search alumni, because one thing that alums cannot search students. This is a student program for students to reach out to alumni. I will say that Alumni Affairs is working, and they have actually submitted a proposal already to create on the same platform an alum to alum networking opportunity. Some of you may also say, oh, this kind of looks like LinkedIn, or what's different about LinkedIn than this platform? One is the alums have volunteered to be part of this platform, and the other is alums have no idea if you're looking at their profile. So you have the, the confidence of just kind of searching and finding those people that really can help answer the questions that you have. That's really the purpose of the platform, engaging.
You mentioned LinkedIn several times. Is This is also very reminiscent of the EU. My first question is there a huge research effort for this particular platform? And is there a way to connect academia with EU to this?
So, right now, no. To both. One of the things that we found out, and this is just kind of as an example of why not yet, and maybe we will down the road, maybe it's a great suggestion, but we know that there are a lot of different mentoring and networking resources across Cornell, for example, and that could be one as well. But it's really just another resource. And it's a resource that, again, doesn't specify just for the academia world or just for athletes at Cornell or just for the hotel school. It's really everyone. That's a great question. And keep that in mind. Feel free to send me an email with that suggestion.
Thank you so much for
thank
coming.
You, everyone.
So next we have Alicia for the doctoral experience survey. Okay. So
today I'm going to be talking sort of briefly on the 2017 doctoral experience survey. For people who might not know what the doctoral experience survey is, it's a survey administered by the graduate school every other spring semester. So in odd years, they administer the doctoral experience survey. The survey invites responses from all doctoral students enrolled in a graduate school degree program for at least 2 years. And it includes, I'm not going to read all of them, but a wide variety of sections related to various different components of doctoral student life. So the reason why this survey is so relevant for us, one is because it's actually a major source of information for us regarding the quality of doctoral student life here at Cornell. The graduate school administers it, and they use this information to make decisions, and it's useful for us to know what's in that in the report. Also, a lot of it can potentially inform advocacy decisions we as a body make. So if you're going to be sticking around with the GPSA in the fall, some of these may be potential advocacy opportunities. And if you aren't going to be sticking around with us in the next year, there's still a lot of potential for conversations within your graduate field, your department, related to some of the things that are in here. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the response rate. So this year they had a response rate of 63%, which was actually higher than the previous two cycles. In 2013, it was 48%, and then in 2015, it was 54%. So we've had an upward trend in terms of participation in this survey, which is great. I'm now going to go through a bunch of figures from the report. I actually think it would probably be easiest if you have a question to just raise your hand and ask me then while we're on that slide. And if not, or if you're not sure if you want to mention it here, don't worry, we'll be talking about it more in division breakout, so everyone will have an opportunity to sort of think and mull over the data. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is student life experience at Cornell. So the data is broken down by divisions. So almost everything I'm going to show you is broken down by division. And most of them are the scale of poor, fair, good, very good, and excellent. And so the percentages are just summing up the good and above. So something that pretty much stands out right away is that for student life experience at Cornell, the humanities tend to report a lower quality student of life experience compared to the other divisions. Kind of conversely, though, if you look at the quality of graduate-level teaching by faculty, the humanities greatly outpace the remaining division in terms of the quality of graduate-level teaching they're receiving, with them making it into the 92 percentile, which is higher than any other percent I've seen in the survey. So there's sort of those two things going on there. general body meeting, they actually did ask a question related to the opportunity to collaborate across disciplines, and the social sciences is significantly lower than the other disciplines regarding their access to the opportunity to collaborate across disciplines. So a potential topic of conversation as we think about some of the suggestions put forth by the organizational committee on restructuring in the social sciences. I don't know if I got that name right. Something else that's interesting is, and I hope these two slides look big enough, but for people who can't see, the one on the left is how often you typically have substantive contact with your advisor about your progress in research. For the life sciences, physical sciences, they actually meet with their advisors the most frequently, with the highest number of people reporting that they meet with their advisors weekly or even more than that, followed then by social sciences at 28%, so almost half a drop there, and then with humanities coming in at a weekly or more of 9%. However, if you look at the next figure, which is about whether or not students view this frequency as adequate, most students report it as being about right. So there is sort of this division-specific desire for time with their advisor. So potential conversation topic there. Something that I think I find interesting and other members of exec find interesting is this question on effectiveness of meeting with your DGS or another faculty member to assess your academic progress at least annually. And one-fifth of respondents who participated in a meeting with their DGS and or another faculty to assess academic progress did not rate the experience as effective. So 21% rated it as somewhat or very ineffective. So we're not sure what's going on in those meetings or how we can sort of work to change that, but we definitely think that that's a conversation that might merit some more discussion, not just here in the body, but also back in our fields and departments. Another thing that is potentially concerning, and I actually would say it is concerning, it's not potentially concerning, is they added a question to the 2017 survey that said, during the most recent fall term, how many hours per week on average did you devote to TA responsibilities? As a reminder, the Cornell University policy for a standard TA appointment is that responsibilities should be no more than 20 hours in any single week, and average no more than 15 hours per week. So, this is a huge problem, particularly already a huge problem in the life sciences, the physical sciences, and the social sciences, with one-third of respondents saying that they're working more than the allowed policies, and then over half of the humanities students are working over that time limit. So I really would strongly recommend, from a personal perspective, not from my position, a conversation in the future about this policy and whether or not it's actually being enforced at all. But you also now have this data to take back to your departments. Another thing that we don't necessarily understand is the question regarding financial support. So the question is, financial support for students in my program is distributed fairly. Social sciences actually reports much lower on that in terms of a positive or agreeing that it's distributed fairly, with something like 19% actually saying that they disagree with that statement, which is comparatively different than the other divisions. And so that might be an interesting conversation for social science folks in the room, because we don't know what's motivating that at all. Moving away from that to campus climate a little bit. This question was whether or not Cornell demonstrates a strong institutional commitment to diversity, sort of capping out at 77% there, individuals who agree with that statement. Something for folks who are on student advocacy and DISC next year to think about. And whether or not students are respectful of one another when discussing controversial issues or perspectives. And once again, you see that it kind of varies between divisions, but with humanities sort of reporting the strongest level of disagreement with that statement. once again, there's a wide variety in terms of positive responses to this, but it actually kind of feels like the arts and humanities and the social sciences just are report more negative interactions with our psychological counseling services. So I think that that merits more conversation about what's going on there. Yeah.
What was the question that
I was asking? So, okay, it looks like I have the big one. It was in a larger question on. One sec, sorry. On resources and services, and the question was just rate the quality of the following resources and services provided by Cornell, and this was on psychological counseling services in the program, my question. Yeah. And then the next one is the next two are about things that students see as obstacles or for success. And so one that came out is potentially interesting is the level of financial support with sort of a larger number in the arts and humanities and social sciences reporting that their level of financial support was an obstacle to their success. And then this one was sort of more strong, I guess, in the life and physical sciences, but really not too encouraging across the board, but about there's a large number of individuals who report their relationship with their advisor as an obstacle to success. So I know that this body has had conversations about mentorship in the past, but this might indicate that there's potentially more. I don't think it indicates that there's potentially more. There is more to be done in that area in particular. And because there's a question about us in there, I feel it important to include. There's a question about student representation in the survey, and the question is, the Graduate Professional Student Assembly effectively represents the concerns of graduate students. It's actually not a change from the last couple years. So if you go and look at the 2013-2015, this is about where we clock in every survey time. So it's not like an increase or a decrease compared to last cycle. Yeah.
So any questions about if people knew what the GPSA was, let alone what it effectively represents? So that's a high percentage of major degrees or disagrees with me. They don't know who we are.
There wasn't that question on the survey, but I think that that's probably potentially accurate, is that most people who didn't know just like neither agree nor disagree. But that's also particularly why we have a communications committee and why it's important, is that it allows us to actually make sure that more people know what we are so they can decide whether they disagree or agree and they're not just in the gray region. But it's something for us to think about as we move forward, especially as we are having more and more conversations about restructuring and how we represent students, to think and sort of take a step back and recognize that where this is where we're at in terms of the responses.
Can I just add, the number of responses is just about equal to the number of students who come to new student orientation every year, where GPSA has a brief part on the program to introduce GPSA. So if you want to shake something up and do an interpretive dance to whatever you want to do to introduce to about 800 students every year, what GPSA does.
I like how you're looking at Alex Loyman for that.
And I'm giving you a
My eyesight's not that good.
Well, my interpretive dance goes on very good.
But yeah, so this is definitely something that I would encourage us to continue to think about as we move forward.
Just a quick follow up to that. I was the impression that the first year GPSA had done the orientation program. Is that correct?
No. So I don't know how long, Jan, you might know how long back we've been doing it, the grad school one at least.
For as long as I've been here, and this will be my seventh new graduate student orientation in August, so at least that long, but I don't think that was the first time.
So Rena gives the president gives a speech at the grad school orientation. That we've been doing for 7 years, but when I stepped on the DECOM last year, that was the first time we started tabling at orientation. And this last year, Ariana, who's with DECOM, did a great job at increasing our presence at the professional school orientation. So that, the tabling at the orientation is relatively new, but the president has always given us a small speech.
Okay, thank you.
Is there a comparable survey that has been given in professional school contexts or master's program contexts that we should be looking at that data alongside this?
I think the individual master's programs do have surveys. Like PMS just have a survey that goes out to the school.
What about professional schools? I just feel like as GPSA, since we're representing all of them, if that data exists, we should really be
called. So that data has not been shared with us. So grad school has shared the Pearl Experience survey results with us. The professional schools do not. I guess I'm looking at it sounds like maybe not.
So both Johnson and Law Office are recent surveys out. GPSA doesn't share on them. Actually,
I don't mean like that. What you say appears on them. I mean that we see the schools are representing professional students as well. And I am just looking over here at our best student colleagues, kind of shaking their head.
So is it is it like public on a website or?
It's done by the law school. It's done by the Cornell Law School Student Association. Jonathan is the same way.
Yeah, that data has never been shared with us. So the executive committee received an email and it was published with all of the results. We have not received comparable data for any of the
faculty
or
master programs. Yeah.
Any other questions on
Matt? And then. My question is, a lot of professional students, I know this is only for doctoral students in the graduate school. The law school and Johnson have a very small number of equivalent PhDs in the graduate schools of law, PhD, at the DBA for the business school. They're not technically in the division because there's only like, not a lot of them. Are they included in this or are they stuck in somewhere?
Ken, I don't know if you would know the answer to that. So if you go, so this is the report, but there is a dashboard that has the data in aggregate, and so some of the stuff I did have to dig around in the dashboard, and I think that if you do dig around in the dashboard, you can demarcate people by college, not division. And so Jay might have an answer there.
We can do it by division. We can do it by degree program. So for graduate programs that have a professional degree, we can pull out MPS or MPA, we can pull it out that way. And I will say just real quickly, everything you saw when the graduate school meets with the DGS in every field, we do 45 meetings a year, so we get every field covered within 2 years. We also show them these data. And Jessica, we really question them when the numbers of students reported working over the 15 to 20 hour week. We really question them that and we say, what are you doing about this? So we encourage you to also say to the DGS, what are you doing about this?
In discussion with the DGS is the pressure that they are under to provide classes to undergrads who need to graduate, like for instance, seminars based on the number of students they have teaching those classes, and how they were distributed at the university, not just by the decision or the department makes, but at the institution as a whole makes. So it is a multi-layered issue, I would just say.
Okay. So I have some here, and then these three, and then we have to go into division breakout. And division breakout will be a conversation more on the survey to have a more division specific thing about some of the division specific. So quickly.
My one thing was just in terms of publicity. So because I was an alumni here, I didn't, even though it was mandatory for me to go to orientation, I didn't go, and most of my friends who came back also didn't go to orientation. So there's a very good chance that if there's a way to get to talk to seniors, especially those who are probably coming back to grad school, and have them know about the GPSA earlier, even though it's probably something all the time. That would probably be another way to get a lot of alumni coming back to grad school.
Okay.
Two questions about availability. Is the support publicly available? Is the actual raw data available?
I don't know if the raw Excel or something text file, cat file is available. Jan, do you know if the raw data is available? It's mostly through the dashboard.
Yeah, I mean,
even through the dashboard, we're really careful not to report anything when the numbers of a program would be so small that you could, for example, a small program by gender, by race, by citizenship, know who's responding. I forget what that number is, or we don't post the numbers. But so the raw data is not up there, but we have it. And we're always open to anybody saying, can we get a report about this? Because we have an internal system that all your PGFs and GFAs have access to, where they can run their own reports, or they can put in what we call a ticket to request a report being run. So if you ever have a need for more from these data, just ask them. And unless we're going to breach the anonymity or confidentiality with which students respond, we can produce other reports. You can email me, jan.allen, and I'll refer you to Ann Laughlin. I don't know her email off the top of my head, but she actually oversees all of this and produces the reports. But email me, jan.allen at Cornell. Did I say Gmail?
No. Okay, so we do have the transition into division breakouts, but the common is going to be about this more. If you have more questions, like, feel free to keep asking, and we'll be floating around. Oh, I have to tell people where to go. Can we have, same as always, life sciences over here, humanities, physical sciences in the back, social sciences, and professional schools, you can congregate to talk about surveys for professional schools if you'd like. I don't. If not, you can sit where you're at. You don't have to, like, talk.
Can't really look at that place. He was making it wrong.
Also, professional school background is
I'm going to go to the next one.
Seconds to answer, I think is what the procedure says. We will then vote by ballot. And then after we count and tabulate the results, we'll announce them. So in the case of an uncontested election, this is a little different than we've done them before. So the sole nominee will get 30 seconds to introduce themselves to the body. Voting will still occur via secret ballot, so the ballot that you have in your hand. You can write no confidence is an acceptable write-in. So even if that person is running uncontested, if you believe that they can't fill the obligations of that position, you can write in no confidence as a vote. The candidate must secure a majority compared to no confidence to win. So in the case of a contested election, so if we have more than one candidate for a position, each nominee will get 45 seconds to introduce themselves. The election will then be conducted by ranked voting in the order of most preferred to least. So when you write, make sure that the first person you write down is your most preferred candidate. And then go down with no tie. Once again, no confidence is an acceptable write-in. And the candidate must secure a majority in order to win. The ballot counting procedures for contested elections. The elections committee will tally the votes by the top-ranked candidate only. If no candidate in that first round secures a majority, the candidate with the lowest number of votes is eliminated, and ballots for that candidate will be recounted with the second-ranked candidate considered the top candidate. And then the process repeats until a candidate secures a majority. So one, just really quickly talking about the no confidence vote. So in any of the votes we have today, members may submit a no confidence vote. Blank ballots shall be counted as no confidence votes. If you don't want them to be counted as no confidence, i.e. you want to abstain, don't hand us a ballot. Keep your ballot. If you hand us a blank one, we'll count it as no confidence. You cannot rank a candidate below no confidence. So say we have four people running and you put no confidence second and then me next, we're not going to count that. Should no confidence secure a majority, the seat shall open to a second round of nominations. For officer positions, this process has to repeat until the seat is filled and they can't be vacant. For all other positions, the seat remains vacant if no confidence secures a majority in the second round of voting. So before we go into voting, does anyone have any questions for me? On the procedure, I mean. So for certain positions, and I'll have them on the slide, any matriculated graduate or professional student can run for the position. For standing committee chairs in particular, there's a preference for voting members, but any member can serve if no voting member would like to serve. Who's talking to me? Matt. I'm not doing Matt's pick.
I was going to say, for determining committee chairs, A, just a historical question, we fix our bylaw, but in terms of for membership, the documents are not clear ex officio. Some parts they are members, we are members, some parts we aren't. For voting committee chairs, our committee chairs are ex officio members who are voting for those?
No.
For committee members?
No.
Well, that can be broken, I wasn't going to pass it.
We have, sorry, that's why we clarified it, because we have broken these in the past, and it doesn't always go well. So that's why we clarified that. There are procedures in our documents for ties, and we'll break them out if we need to. Any other questions procedurally?
About the order, so are you planning on, like, describing all the positions before we want to run for them, or like one position, top?
One position, and then talk about that, and then move to the next position. So we won't go through all the positions. There's an order we have to stick with in terms of for the elections, and that was sent out in one of the emails. The order is, oh man, I'm going to have to remember this one. It's on the ballot, yes. So, so we always run top down. So if you then don't run the first one, you would run for something else. Or the kind of a thing.
Okay, so
Can I just make a motion for like a real quick, like 60 seconds, and just explain what all the different positions do? Because I think that's what the question is, not what order to go in, but just like, could you clarify, particularly like the executive positions, what some of the roles are before, so people can decide if they want to run for CDCOM?
Okay, so instead of having them before each election, let's just go down the list in order of people and have the current person holding that position give their spiel to the whole body now. And then not do it during that round of voting. So, I guess Rena, you'll start with
President. So, can we ask
you a question?
Just one more. Since I'm online, do you have any chance to do absentee voting, or does it have to be done?
Oh, we did not.
You can absentee run, right?
You can absentee run for absentee balloting. I guess
there's no way we can confirm if that person is who they say they are, so.
So no. We're going to say no to the absentee ballot. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it. We have no idea to confirm it. We don't have a secure way to do that right now. Okay, so if there aren't any questions, Rena, Barbara.
Okay, so for the president, you're the president.
So you represent the body in the board of trustee meetings, so you get to go to all of them, and then you also frequently meet with a lot of administrators. We meet very regularly with the news, for example, but also other administrators like students, etc. And you also often get called to attend a lot of committees, a lot.
You chair the meeting?
I chair the meeting, yes. yeah.
You're also like the figurehead of the assembly, right?
Yeah.
How many hours a week does it take in terms of time?
I would say it's depending on your commitment. I think, 15, 20 hours would be fair. But from my experience, I have put in maybe double of that. But I think it depends on, what you want, the direction that you want to take in general.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions on press, we'll move on to EDP. So the executive vice president, as the name would suggest, reports the second in command to the president, and so if the president is unable to attend any sort of administrative meetings, you can go, if they're willing to allow you, go in their place. The biggest responsibilities, I'd say, for the executive vice president would be you chair the executive committee, one. The second thing is that you're responsible for setting the agenda and having it approved by the executive committee, so that's one big other thing I do. And by far the biggest thing you do is you manage the internal attendance and membership of the general body, which is, it can be unwieldy at times. But that's the three biggest things that I do. People have questions for me?
What's your time limit?
I would say that you can do the role in about 10 hours a week, but you can always put in more. So right now I'm putting in, like you said, closer to 30 to 40 hours a week. Any other questions?
All right, so I'm the current Vice President of Operations, which is the main role that I have, at, beyond just being a member of the executive committee, is I am the chair of the Operations and Staffing Committee, which is charged with filling, making sure the committees, both internal, so like student advocacy, Diversity International Students Committee, faculty awards, etc. Those committees have staffing members, and then also that the external committees, like appointees to the university assembly committees or to other presidential task forces, where things along those lines, and also have representatives from the graduate professional student assembly. And then within ops, we are also addressing a lot of different things, such as internal organization, bylaws updates, etc. I would say that near the beginning of the year, when people are getting filled into different committee roles, it's about twice as much work, so maybe more like 10 hours, as opposed to 5 hours a week that I'm doing now, mainly the executive committee requirements.
So hi everyone, if you don't know who I am, I'm Ariana. I was the person who polled VP for communications. And the role is, you're the part of GPSA that ensures communication, good lines of communication between the executive committee and the body, the general body of GPSA, as well as from the general body of the GPSA to the general community of Cornell and the graduate professional community. So the way that I do this is by one chairing the communications committee, which meets at least once a month, and your committee consists of the division chiefs, so you have a good idea of what's happening, the thoughts between all the GPSA members within their specific committees, divisions. The second responsibility is ensuring that there is a good understanding of what's happening in the community overall, so going to as many meetings as possible, specifically in the professional student arena, since there's not as many professional students in the general body meetings as we would like. And I think that sums it up pretty well. General time commitment, you need at least 10 hours of a week to devote to the position.
Council. So council is a pretty unique role. It's literally says in the charter that as council you can't be assigned any responsibility you don't voluntarily take on. The body can't, it's hard to overturn that. It's also unique in the fact that the only people who are eligible to run for it, since Ariana and Misha are taking themselves out of contention, is Alex, Rena, and Sarah. It has to be a former member of the exec. It doesn't have to be one of the positions that it sits. So it sits vacant, and it has in the past. And really the role is whatever kind of you want it to be, and then it's probably best to ask what the president and exec team what they need. You kind of act as an institutional member, like in-house institutional memory for the rest of the general body, as well as some guidance and mentorship for the and it can be virtually no time commitment to, you know, $100 a week.
Okay, next we have the general committee representative.
Yeah, so I still have a year left on my term, but our position is up this semester. So the general committee is the legislative body of the graduate school, and basically what we do is manage the code of legislation, which dictates things from department requirements to degree requirements to DGS opinions and that kind of thing. It's not a huge time commitment, there's about a meeting a month. And oftentimes a lot of material should be prior to meetings, but not a massive commitment. I know some of you like to come see the questions, but happy to answer.
And then we have the standing committee chairs. We have student advocacy. We're here next to you. Three.
For our student advocacy committee, I would say that you should be willing to put in at least like 5 to 10 hours a week to really do it well. It's kind of versatile in the fact that you can take it in different directions. But I would say there would have to hold like a town hall meeting and make sure that you can hear the concerns of the graduate and professional student bodies at least once a semester. That way you know the initiatives that you're taking on are ones that are well founded. And also I have a co-chair that can add more. Nick, would you like to add information?
And then we have programming board.
Hi guys, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Cheyenne. The programming board is one of the social committee of the graduate professional student assembly. I don't know why I said all of that. But it can be pretty low time commitment, so you're responsible for a rather large budget.
not here, but Alex will explain the position.
Sure. So basically, the faculty teaching and mentoring awards are held every year, and the GPSA basically solicits nominations from current members or current graduate professional students for faculty that they want to honor with as being exceptional at teaching or mentoring. And the role of the chair is basically in the spring semester, you create the survey, you solicit nominations, and then you take time to assess the nominations, eventually choose who receives the award, and then put together the ceremony to give out the awards. So I would say that during the fall, there's basically nothing that happens in the current iteration. And then in the spring, it ramps up, and once you start hitting February, because it's around April is when the nominations are typically solicited.
Diversity and international students.
I would estimate just takes 5 to 10 hours a week. Yeah, that sounds right. The main responsibilities are holding meetings every 2 weeks, organizing events, meeting with administrators and students, coming to GPSA meetings.
Okay. And then lastly, we have university assembly representatives. So either one or the other, or
Matt. Sure. So, doing assembly is a whole other assembly. You can take 5 seats, the president plus 4 more. The UA controls things to get to conduct, transportation, things that are cross-cutting and affect the entire community. In general, there's a time commitment. You are looking at, I think, between 5 and 10 hours a week to do it well, because you've got a whole list of meetings, and the UA expects all voting members to be on committees as well. Obviously, there is some change. This year, I've chaired one of the UA's committees, so I probably spent on average 30, 40 hours a week. You may have to do that. Sometimes I have. But it's great to have this opportunity. And if anyone has any questions.
Okay. I think that's about it. All the positions. Yeah. Okay. So now that we've done that, we're going to move into actually voting. So the first position that we're opening for is the presidency. So we will now solicit nomination for president.
I'll call me. I'm chairing now, I guess. I'd like to nominate Rena for next
term. Second.
Thank you, but there are no seconds needed, but we appreciate the sentiment. Yes. So, Rena, do you accept the nomination?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for president, the presidency position? Okay. Going once. Going twice. Okay, so Rena, you now have 30 seconds to introduce myself.
Yes.
In case you don't know me yet, I'm Rena, and I'm a PhD candidate in linguistics. And I guess my experience in shared governance have been the president of the assembly in the past year. I was in the exec position in the university assembly the previous year, and I have also served as, I guess, liaison to other assemblies, like the Faculty Senate, Employee Assembly. I also currently sit in a lot of committees, transportation, policy advisory group, almost all of the Faculty Senate committees. Yes. And whenever I can, I do visit our own internal committee meetings, like SAC, and then the AC meetings, and I talk to Ben a lot about that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's about it. That's how 40 hours a week is spent. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so now we have the potential for 2 questions from the membership. I just set the limiter.
How can we help you scale back how many hours?
I think increased sort of like participation in like committees would help. So like that, like for example, this past year it has been especially challenging because psych did not really have any functioning chair in the fall. I was running that too in general. And so I think that to have all the internal committees running, up and running well is really, really big help.
What do you see doing different next year versus this year?
So I think in the past year we have spent a lot of time sort of like in reaction to things that happened, because we had a lot of things that happened that were not planned. And in the like just reflecting on how we've run the exec team this past year, I feel like we could have a better division of labor in that, you know, we have four people and two of them could really be more inward looking and with things sort of like more participation and paying more attention to, you know, like getting more members into the group, whereas the other two could really be outward in that way. In the past year, we've had really four people trying to do everything at once, and that can be a little chaotic at times.
Okay, so we're now moving into voting. So you remember there's because I'm contesting, you can either write Rina Winnerto's name, or you can write no confidence if that's the way that you'd like to proceed. We would ask that once you have your ballot, you push it to the end so that Samir, Ariana, and I can grab them. And for up there, push it to the end, and we'll come through a dragon. Oh yeah, please just hold it in hand for us.
Does anyone not know how to spell her name?
R-I-N-A. And her last name is W-I-N-A-R-E-O. So I don't know why, but I don't have a plan. Okay.
Hello everyone, my name is Andrew Babienzo Gomez. I am from Romance Studies. Also UCL. I study literature and film, Brazilian and Mexican. I am interested in the position because I think it's a great way to get involved, obviously. But one of the things that I would like to incorporate is a theme division breakup is extremely useful, especially at the first year of the representative. And what I would like to see some a little bit further during orientation and have a mini orientation for the division chiefs, that way, and maybe even the incoming guild reps, that way we can give them the tools necessary to be able to participate fully in GPS. And that's one of my main books. I think if we give them the tools in the very beginning, we can get so much more out of it.
Great. Okay, so we'll now take two questions from the membership, if there are any. I don't see any. Motion to vote. Okay, yeah. So same procedure as last time, guys. I'm going to be running and grabbing, so write it down and have it in. I'm going to do a fumble with that. Okay.
A E-N-D-Y.
Elena, would you like to nominate someone?
I would like to nominate Alexa Cohn.
Alexa, do you accept the nomination?
I do.
Great. Are there any other nominations for the Vice President for Communications position? Okay. Alexa, could you come down here and give a quick 30-second spiel?
Hi everyone, my name is Alexa Cohen. I'm a first year grad student in microbiology, and I've been involved with TQSA for the past year. I sit on the staff committee and this, and I'm currently a UA representative. I'm super excited to potentially fill this role as a UC communications. I have a lot of really great ideas, like bringing back the graduate newsletter from GPSA and actually putting events out on Facebook for meetings, because I feel that we could advertise this more to the greater graduate and professional community. So I hope you vote for me.
Does any, we can now have two questions for Alexa if there are any. Motion to vote. Wait, Jesse, did you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then we're moving into voting. Can people vote on Alexa? Can you just vote on your magazine? And then I'll get the.
Alexa is the first name, A-L-E-S-A.
Yep.
So for Vice President of Communications for 2018,
family is Alexa.
Okay, we're moving on to the general committee representative. I will now solicit nominations for the DC rep.
I would like to nominate Mo Talaji.
No, Mo, you accept the nomination? Okay, great. Are there any other nominations for the general committee? Okay, Mo, do you want to just give a brief?
Sure.
Things are shorter even.
I'm Catherine, or Mo. I'm a second year in the communication department. This is my second year in the GPSA. I represent my department of public affairs. But I look forward to upping my commitment here and actually do some more work as a representative.
Great. Okay. So now we're going to be ready to vote in for the DC representative. Can we just come back and activate your name?
Thank you.
Okay, do we have all the ballots in?
Nope. Okay, so are you guys ready to announce the EC rep?
Yes, the new EC rep for 2018 to 2019 is Mo. Congratulations.
Okay, next one is the programming board chair. I'll now accept nominations for programming board. Cheyenne?
I would like to nominate Doc Shador.
Doc, do you accept the nomination?
Yes.
Okay, great. Could you stand up and give like a 30 second?
I am Dr. Ram, a first year of math student, based on engineering, small tech, dimension, division chief, and student supervisor. I both of you are being able to provide a special position. I have the actual link between the Lattice World Foundation, Empathy Group Organization Lattice, and GPSA, for our last meeting throughout the year. Now that I'm an undergrad, I've worked and I've headed many events, it's called the report that I'm going to be talking to people. And I feel like you all give me a chance that I can talk to you experience and contribute to this. Thank you.
Great. Okay. We're now moving into voting. So, Doc D A K S H. Great. Okay. Are there any other nominations for the Diversity International Students Committee, Chair? Okay. Seeing that, Eugene, do you want to get a quick spiel and then we'll move to voting?
Yeah, so I'm Eugene. I'm a second year PhD student in soil and crop sciences. I've been chair of this for the past year. I think I've done a pretty decent job of it. I'm willing to do it again.
Okay, we're now moving into voting, so.
For the 2018-2019 DISC chair, it is Eugene Philip Law.
Oh my gosh, wait, we'll see you right.
Okay, so while they tally that up,
I'd like to make a motion to forward resolution 17 to now again.
Yes, second.
Then consent to doing the resolution before coming to updates. Seeing none.
I would ask that anyone who has just been elected, please meet me after.
Yes, and the old officers stay as well. The new officer.
Yes.
Okay. So the motion passes, so we are now discussing GPSA Resolution 17.
Okay.
And it's emergent.
Yeah, so hey everyone. So to pass this, we actually need a 2/3 approval because it's going to make a change to the charter in its current state. So the background of this is essentially that for the past, since 2015, let's say, the Big Red Barn has held an annual networking event coinciding with Alum Weekend. Alum Weekend, prior to this, didn't have any sort of connection to graduate and freshman students. It was just for alums to sort of have a good time. And so, in past years, it's been funded either by the GPSA or by the programming board. And that kind of switched in 2016 and 2017, where the programming board just took over fully for that. However, this year, when we were contacted by the Big Red Barn, Chris Corda, the director, asked us for the money, and everyone said where it's coming from. The programming board has exhausted its funds. So what this resolution wants to do is, from the rollover funds, we put forward the $750, which is how much we spent the past few years, and then add an obligation to the programming board in the next filing cycle that one of the things they have to do is fund this for the next 2 years. I will take questions if people have them.
Yes, we just have a few. So we're taking questions now. Jesse?
Same question.
I have a question, but something's happening.
Procedurally, because it's a charter amendment, you're technically not allowed to go to a charter to be either introduced. However, as a perfectly allowed workaround, because this is amending the obligations document that we passed at our last meeting, what we can do is motion to reconsider the obligations document, amend that in, recast the obligations document, and then be fine.
Motion to do whatever we need to do to pass this.
So I just want to know that we need to do. We're making amending the obligation to make the second meeting a funding obligation, and technically that can't be sent in a resolution because it's our last meeting, so we have to do the impact.
Can you restate this for me?
Yeah. So the motion is to reconsider the allocation procedures as passed in the last meeting, which required a two-thirds vote. You bring them back to the floor. You then motion to amend that in, and then you can recast them, and that is all up and up because the obligation document was introduced 3 meetings ago. This is just treated as regular amendments. Then you're fine. And the rest of the resolution is just the funding for immediate, which is they throw it out whatever.
Okay, Nate.
Point of order. Is this in the charter or is this in the bylaws? If the rules in the bylaws, can we just extend the bylaws
to the charter?
To this thing?
Mm-hmm. Many the charter is the charter. The rules are
so, I see. Okay.
So that's what I have to do. It works because we for two is fine.
Yes, Cassandra.
Would this be able to happen like this June because the filing cycle is not starting yet?
So
then if we put this into the procedures, how are we going to get that money to the limit?
So what this resolution is proposing to do is that from the GPSA, us, in this room, from our rollover funds, we would give $750. But then what ELF is trying to do, which is all this hubbaloo,
yeah,
is trying to then shift who funds it over to the programming board as a funding obligation for them.
Like the top half.
Sure.
So what would need to be done is that this would need to be amended to remove the second resolve clause, do that magically, and then the first resolve clause still needs to be passed in a separate resolution.
A point of question, whatever.
I think
we can just make a motion to grant this money, and we don't even need to do this resolution.
Yes.
Yeah.
If we want to use our rollover funds, we can just motion to do that.
So,
are we, like, so, again, so right now, Is there a motion to grant $750 from the rollover fund that we have at the GPSA to for this event immediately?
I will make that motion.
I will second.
Okay. Is there a second?
Hello.
Okay. So yes.
Point of order. How can the passing a motion that immediately grants funds by like the GPSA without passing any board since it's just directly in the GPSA? Okay.
So, if it's expenditures under $500, the way that we do this with the GPSA is that the current chair of appropriations, who's Cassandra, would just okay it. So that's already occurring. That's been occurring like that. But because this is over $500, we bring it forward to the assembly. But
and
we have the ability.
And our rollover still has like $8,000.
Mm-hmm. So we currently have $8,000 in rollover. And the motion is granting $750 to this CRB alum event that will happen in June, early June. Okay, so we are now discussing the motion.
Motion call the question.
Second.
Okay, and then dispense to calling the question on the motion of granting $750 to the CRB alum event from the GPSA rollover money. Seeing none, we'll vote on this motion right now. Voting members in favor, please raise your flag. Those opposed. So with the with the vote of 14-0-5, the motion passes. We can now give $750 to this event. Thank you. Yay. And then we're moving on to the charter part.
Sure. So motion to reconsider the previously passed GPSA allocation document, whatever it's officially called at the last meeting.
Yes, okay.
Has this already been communicated to the president yet?
It has not been communicated to the president yet.
Okay.
Yes. So there's been a motion to reconsider the previously passed byline funding obligation.
It's 14. Resolution 14.
Resolution 14.
Thank you.
Motion to call the question.
Okay, so we are now discussing the motion. Is there any dissent?
Okay. What's the motion
on the floor? Okay, so can we clarify the motion again?
The motion is to bring Resolution 14 back so we can amend in the funding obligation.
Okay.
So that's 3-4. Sorry.
Okay.
Motion 670.
Is there a
separate? Yeah, we can adjourn. If he says 20 and we finish in 7,
we
can adjourn. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the meeting has been extended by 20 minutes. We will now go until 7:40. Okay, so there's been a motion to bring back Resolution 14 for reconsideration, and there's been a motion to vote on that. Is there a dissent to voting? Those in favor of bringing it back, please raise your pockets. Okay, so
turns out we don't have 2/3 of the members present, and therefore we couldn't recast as we brought it back. Because we need 13 and we have 12 members present, so actually we can't do this all the way to the wall.
Point of I guess it's information for the body. So it's all those like can we recount how many of the voting members are in the room? Just raise your hand.
If you're a voting member,
raise your hand. If you're a voting member.
Yeah, but hey.
How many people are here?
14.
So 14, and can we re-vote on the motion to bring back Resolution 14? We actually need 13 votes on that. Okay, those opposed. Abstaining 12-0-7. We are now in the session of Resolution 14. So I have to. Okay. Let me open Resolution.
I would then motion to add the quoted portions of lines 42 and 43 on the screen to the allocation document under section 5.03 for the GPSB, GPSPB.
Okay. So we're now in discussion of this motion to add this to Resolution 14. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent to call into question? Seeing none?
No, this is incorporated. What the next one does.
So, the motion right now that you're voting on is to incorporate this to Resolution 14. Those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay, those opposed, those abstaining. So with a vote of 13-0-5, this has been incorporated now to Resolution 14, and now we need to recast Resolution 14 with this the result clause.
Wait, the information, this is the one we need the two-thirds for.
So, is there any motion?
Motion to call the question on Resolution 14.
Second, is there any dissent? Seeing none, we'll now vote on the whole Resolution 14, now including this. Those in favor? Okay, those opposed. Abstaining. Okay, with a vote of 14-0-4, a Resolution 14 with this is now passed.
Motion to table this resolution indefinitely.
Sorry, point of order, should you have 14-05?
No.
No, 14-04. We have 18 seated members.
Yes, motion to table this indefinitely.
Okay, is there any dissent to tabling this indefinitely? Seeing none, we will table Resolution 17 indefinitely. Thank you. And we still have committee updates.
Something that happens, so there's this thing called the I-Plus Summit, which happens annually, and Cornell is going to host this year, and we normally host with a big expenditure, and the director will be taking a lot of money for it. The funding model has shifted recently, but we've some backup stuff, and the only thing to know there that changes on Cornell's book, or the GPSA book, now is that the graduate school is going to pay an annual fee for it, $1,500 for it. Instead of paying through the whole thing up front. And so that's more of a, it doesn't change our book that much, but it's just a kind of informational thing to teach us. But to do that, the graduate school has to increase the amount that they pay. And so thank you to the graduate school for that.
Okay,
again, newly elected officers, see me.
Call me
communications.
No updates.
Appropriations.
No updates.
Finance.
I have an update from Beth. She says there are $29,000 left in GTSA SD activity account. $25,000 is left in reserve account to allocate if needed. That money can be spent to support reserve in case there's some problems. Assuming that this will over to next year. It will over to next year. The fiscal year ends on the 30th of June. That's all.
SEC? Chairs are not here. DISC?
Nothing to report.
Programming?
That's all of the rating success. Thanks for banking.
Some of the awards.
They're still working on the taking nominees.
GC. Becca has what? Okay. And Rep.
Oh, you, my son.
Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. Oh wait, sorry, don't get out of the UA. Let's call this open forum. Hey guys, so the votes are in. The UA reps are Matt and Dietrich.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.